Chapter 19. The Discovery Convention was to last 3 days. On the morning of the second day, Emma confessed to collaborating with Magician Azel in exchange for a lighter sentence, sealing the rogue polymaker's fate of prison time and a permanently revoked magician's license. In the evening, the police found the rest of Magician Praff and Alvy's equipment in a nearby storage shed, and their automobile and trailer in a ditch just outside Oxford. One of the officers assigned to the case found a lead on the thug who had attacked Alvy at the cabin and expected to make an arrest soon. The owner of the cabin had not been found, causing the chief to believe either Azel or one of his colleagues had used a false name to purchase the property. On the third day, Alvy and her mentor were finally allowed to attend the festivities. The enormous Imagidome drew in a swarm of attendees, new and veteran, and for hours Alvy managed the line for it, passing out tickets and fulfilling requests for the three visuals provided: Starry Night, Arabian Sand Sea, and His Majesty's Courtyard. While the Imagidome and its otherworldly delights garnered oohs and ahs, it was the prosthesis that had magicians, scientists, and inventors alike engaged, asking questions, and studying the prototype. The captive audience gasped when Magician Praff put a sock over his fist and moved it around in the socket made to fit over Ethel's stump, the various movements causing the fingers to jump and flex. Every time Alvy heard a remarkable or an incredible, she beamed. Polymakers came by the dozen to investigate and learn the new spell. So many of them clustered together, discussing other potential applications for compressed polymers, that Alvy got multiple complaints from Imagidome attendees about the noise disrupting the theater. At 2 o'clock, 4 hours before the convention was to end, Magician Praff set a hand on her shoulder and said, "Your turn." Alvy adjusted her glasses, which Magician Praff had thankfully fixed so that she was no longer bug-eyed on one side. "Pardon?" He gestured to the prosthetic ankle and arm. Newcomers were already approaching the display. She swallowed. "But it's yours." "Ours," he corrected. Taking a deep breath, Alvy nodded and tightened the strings of her apprentice's apron. She slipped between bystanders, most of whom were men, and said, "Welcome. These prototypes are of a prosthetic ankle, arm, and hand, which Magician Marion Praff and myself designed." "Yourself?" repeated a young man. "Yes, sir, I'm his apprentice." He looked doubtful. "Your name?" "Alvy Breckenmacher, sir." Another man asked, "You're not related to Edison's Breckenmacher, are you?" "Yes, sir, he's my father." "The light bulb?" another spoke up. "Forget the light bulb," a fourth shouted. "Show us the fingers." Alvy smiled and took up the white sock, pulling it over her hand and making a fist. "The socket is sensitive to pressure. I'm sure you've heard of the discovery of the new polymaking spell, Compress. You see, these tendons are hollow and filled with liquid polyethylene." Alvy discussed the prototypes for 2.5 hours. The time went by quickly, and she enjoyed every minute of it, but she was still thrilled when Magician Praff returned and excused her to see the convention for herself. She certainly couldn't experience everything in only 90 minutes, of course, and the inability to explore and learn to her heart's content hurt worse than her still sore feet, but it wouldn't do to waste what time she did have by sulking. She started off in the polymaking section, browsing the aisles of booths backdropped by shelves and shelves of library books. One magician had created a new material for parachutes, and another had invented a thinner, clearer kind of tape. She would have loved to describe it to Bennett, but her bag containing his mimic spell had yet to be found. It hadn't been with the other items from the trailer. She imagined Magician Azel had thrown it away with her shoes and luggage long before arriving in Oxford. She sighed. At least there hadn't been anything too sentimental in there. She explored the very small section for folders, looking at textbooks with moving images and giant suspended displays full of flapping birds or swimming fishes, where even the strings were made out of curls of parchment. The pyres had a self-lighting fireplace that featured color-changing flames, as well as self-lighting cigars. There was quite an extensive jewelry display with the gaffers. Magician Azel had taken her money, but Magician Praff had kindly reimbursed her, so she bought a long necklace of clear beads for Ethel and a hair clip shaped like a pond lily for herself. She found bouncing balls that never stilled unless commanded in the cypress section and got two, one for her papa and one for Bennett. There were oddball displays between sections by other scientists and innovators, including demonstrations for the non-magical on how enchanting materials worked, as well as machines designed to do simple tasks in an extraordinarily complicated fashion. Alvy watched as ball bearings were dropped into the start bucket of one of the contraptions. The first action moved a string that tumbled over a stack of cards, that shifted a pencil, that tapped a weight, that came down over a candle to press a weighted wax seal into a letter. As she passed another booth, she overheard someone explaining to a group of adolescents the differences between man-made and nature-made glass. Part of the presentation was a beautiful, warped piece of glass that had apparently been formed after lightning struck out in a desert. Such glass could not be enchanted by man, just as naturally started fires couldn't be tamed by pyres, and pure metals couldn't be worked by smelters. The smelter section was last on her route. Alvy ogled displays of enchanted train tracks and skeleton keys among the smelters. She wished the latter were for sale. She certainly could have used a metal-morphing key in that basement. She shuddered at the thought as a bell rang out through the halls, signaling the end of the convention. There was a dinner being held afterward. Alvy wondered if she could skip it and snoop around the exhibit some more. Ah, well, there was always next year. The Discovery Convention was to be held in New York City for 1907, a good excuse for a trip home. Alvy and Magician Praff returned to their hotel late. It was a small one down the street, since the closest ones had already been filled. Alvy had her own room, and she wrote a letter home before turning in so she could remember everything she'd seen. She would break the news of her cabin adventure through Magician Praff's enchanted mirror when she returned to Briar Hall. She woke early the next morning, got dressed, unfortunately in a skirt, and headed home in a hired buggy. Fred had been discharged from the hospital, Magician Praff told her, but he was resting at home. He wouldn't be back to work until the following Monday. The buggy pulled into the drive of Briar Hall, close to noon. Alvy was eager to get out. Her feet only ached a little bit, but her backside was tired of the cushioned seat in the back of the buggy. She'd only been stretching for a moment when she noticed a Benz parked ahead of them. Bennett! She rushed into the house, startling the housekeeper. She didn't need to go far to find Bennett Cooper. He was in the gallery with Ethel and Mrs. Praff, who was giving them a tour of the various portraits there. "Bennett! Ethel!" she exclaimed, startling the lot of them. Upon seeing Alvy, Mrs. Praff ran out of the gallery, likely to find her husband. Bennett and Ethel stayed, and Alvy lost her air when Bennett threw his arms around her. "Are you all right?" Her hair muffled his voice. Ethel said, "Oh, Alvy, we were so worried about you." Bennett drew back, and Alvy said, "You heard?" He nodded. "We had Oxford policemen showing up on our doorsteps, asking us questions about Magician Praff's work." Alvy's mouth formed a small O. It made sense. She wondered if the Oxford chief of police had determined Magician Azel was guilty before Alvy had requested a demonstration with the prosthesis. Whatever witnesses Magician Azel was able to provide, they had Ethel, the woman who'd inspired the project in the first place, and her brother, who had visited the preliminary several times, on their side. "You're all right?" Bennett asked again, his hands on her shoulders. She nodded. "My feet are a little sore, and I'm in a skirt, but other than that, I'm fine." Ethel laughed at the same time as Bennett asked, "What happened to your feet?" Alvy related the story then, about the automobile problems and the trailer in the basement. Ethel covered her mouth with her hand the entire time, leaning forward as though Alvy were reciting some great play. Bennett, on the other hand, paled a little more with each detail. She didn't mention Magician Azel's hand on her leg. But the convention was great, she hastily added at the end. It really was. I'm sorry I couldn't write to you, Bennett. You hardly owe me an apology. His voice was a little weak. Oh, Alfie, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I wish I could have done something. Ethel elbowed her brother with her good arm. Her left still wore that heavy, false-looking hand. You helped to quit them. That's enough. Still, Bennett's eyes were downcast with guilt. Alfie stepped closer to him and took his hand, earning a small quirk of his lips in response. Ethel? Magician Praff's voice echoed through the gallery. Alfie turned to see the Praff standing arm in arm, both smiling. Just the young lady I want to see. I believe I have something for you. Ethel lit up like a light bulb. Really? Right now? Magician Praff grinned. Come, I'll have the footman bring it around to the preliminary. Ethel's grin shined brighter than an enchanted lamp. Alfie slipped her hand in Bennett's. Come on, it will be perfect. A package arrived from Oxford 3 weeks later. Alfie took it to her workroom without even opening it. She cleared off all her desk and counter space, putting away new spells and the books detailing them. She opened the package with her pocket knife and pulled out the lock. Grabbing a set of tools, she carefully pried the lock apart, which was tricky to do since the plastic had melted and reformed inside it. She didn't dare soften it up to quicken her work. That would botch the integrity of the discovery. And discover she did. When she finally got to the guts of the lock, her suspicions were confirmed. The plastic had melted with delicate metal parts. Not melted against them, but with them. The metal of the inside cylinder had merged with the plastic, as though Alfie had melted that, too. But she couldn't have. She wasn't a smelter, and the melt spell shouldn't have been nearly hot enough to affect the metal. She marveled at the lock, turning it this way and that, then began to diagram it. Later in the lab, she began building a lock of her own, a simple design with all the components made of plastic. The task took her a day and a half to complete. She missed a homework deadline, but she couldn't bring herself to care as she molded and formed and shaped. She installed the new lock in her workroom door, about a foot above the handle to test it. Sure enough, it locked. She commanded it, unlatch, but the plastic did not respond. So she made another lock, taking care with each component to ensure its integrity, missed another deadline, installed it above the first, and commanded it, unlatch. The plastic didn't heed her. It was when Alfie collected her monthly stipend and asked Fred to take her to a hardware shop that Magician Praff finally asked, Alfie, what are you up to? We're supposed to be discussing thermodynamics in 30 minutes. I'll be right back. It's very important, she promised. Magician Praff sighed, but nodded his consent. He, of all people, understood the draw of discovery. So Alfie went out and bought 8 locks, all of the same make, all with a deadbolt. She studied them in her workroom, took them apart, replicated them, took notes, built theories, stared at the lock from the basement in the cabin. By the end of it, her door had over 12 locks installed in it. Most of the metal ones were useless, their keyholes pumped full of plastic. 11 days after the first lock had arrived from Oxford, Alfie began writing a paper. On the 12th day, Magician Praff came into her workroom near 10 o'clock at night. I'm going to have to get you a new door, he said, eyeing the locks. Alfie was taking notes. Alfie? I think I figured it out, she said, lifting her head and setting down her pencil. She rubbed a cramp from her hand. I have a theory, Magician Praff. He folded his arms and leaned against the counter. Oh? And what is this theory that's kept you here all hours of the night, barely stopping to eat, putting off your assignments, and ruining a perfectly fine door? She handed him the lock from the basement. Look at this. He studied it. He must have noticed the way the metal and the plastic had melted together, for his brow furrowed and his lips formed a small frown. This is how I got out of that room. I'm calling it bending, for lack of a better word. She opened a drawer and fished through the mess of papers within it, including several used-up mimic spells from Bennett, and pulled out a smudged diagram, a circle of all seven magics, including excision. Imagine this, a magician who can bend into an adjacent material, according to that diagram, it's not a perfect diagram, and manipulate it. Magician Praff lowered the picture. I'm not following you. Alvy plucked the diagram from his hands and laid it on her desk. I think that's what I did. I think I somehow bent into smelting when I was in the basement. That's why the plastic merged with the metal, why the unlatch command worked. Alvy? It worked with metal because they're both from the ground, see? She pointed to her diagram. Plastic and metal were wedged next to each other, and I think it would work with siping as well, since the disciplines are so closely related and share a lot of raw materials. Think of it. Maybe a smelter could perform a gaffing spell, since their materials are both fundamentally made of stone. I think a folder could even do something with excision, given that their raw materials are both organic, or that, well, all magicians are flesh and blood and... Wait, Alvy. Stop there. Her mentor urged. This is getting... large. Alvy chewed on her lip a moment. It makes sense, I think. Magician Praff set the malformed lock on the counter. And have you been able to replicate this? Her shoulders drooped. No, sir. She'd tried over and over again, doing exactly what she'd done in that basement, uttering the same spells, even the ones that had proved fruitless. She wondered if she was forgetting something, or if it had to be a special sort of metal, or an old lock, or if she just hadn't been able to enter the same frame of mind. But nothing else explains it, she added. Magician Praff sighed. Maybe this is a fluke. Or maybe the door wasn't locked all the way. It was locked all the way. Or perhaps you got the plastic hot enough to do this. He gestured to the lock. We might never know what outside force helped you with this, but until you can repeat the incident, the theory won't hold, neither in the scientific world nor the magical one. Alvy frowned. She knew this, of course, hence all the locks on her door. After a moment of silence, Magician Praff said, We should return to your studies. Alvy nodded. Yes, we should. She rubbed her eyes under her glasses. This would require a lot more study on her part, and a lot more experimentation, a lot more time than she could dedicate at the present moment, and maybe, once she'd mastered polymaking, all of this would make more sense to her. In the morning, he clapped a hand on her shoulder. Let's get some rest tonight, and I'll have Hemsley look into fitting you with a new door. She nodded, glancing down at the messy drawer, at the torn pages scribbled with both her and Bennett's handwriting. Before Magician Praff departed, however, she said, Magician Praff, Are apprentices allowed to marry? His brow raised enough to thoroughly wrinkle his forehead. Well, yes, there's no rule against it. Alvy nodded. Magician Praff lingered a moment more, perhaps waiting for Alvy to say something else. But when she didn't, he slipped away, closing the many-locks door behind him. Alvy sat in her chair a long moment, not thinking of anything in particular or looking at anything specific. After that moment, however, she opened another drawer, which contained a short typed paper titled The Merging of Materials, A Theory of Bending. It would never be published or taken seriously unless she could repeat whatever it was she did in that cabin. As she moved to return it to its drawer, however, she hesitated, considered, glanced at the locks. Then tucking her diagram inside the papers, she folded them into thirds and tucked them into an envelope on which she wrote her home address beneath the name Gunther Breckenmacher. The rest she'd worry about later. Alvy sat in the fourth row of the enormous Royal Albert Hall in London, her hands clasped tightly together, her back erect to help her better see the stage. The gaffer lights hanging from the ornate chandeliers above had been dimmed, while the ones illuminating the stage burned bright. Her chair was upholstered in scarlet, to match the carpeted aisles. Large balconies filled with seating loomed behind her, but no one occupied those. This was a grand occasion, but not the sort of person bought tickets to attend. Alvy had asked her new maid, Jane, to do her hair so its waves were tamed and partially held back by the water lily barrette she'd purchased in Oxford. It matched the slightly green tint of her pants. She had intended to wear a dress, as this was a formal occasion, but Bennett had asked her not to. "It isn't you, Alvy," he'd said in their most recent mimic spellbook, which was tucked securely into her new purse. Magician Pritwin Bailey sat beside her. He didn't talk much, or look at much. He had a pale complexion, made all the paler by his dark hair. He wore thin, silver-rimmed glasses. Alvy wished, not for the first time, that she could wear glasses so small. She'd mentioned plastic lenses to him earlier, a topic that had appeared to utterly bore him. He did, however, become a little more animated when she mentioned the textbooks, the Discovery Convention. They'd also discussed the amount of wattage that would be required to keep the Royal Albert Hall alight should the gaffer lights be replaced by electric ones. She tried to imagine having Magician Bailey as a mentor, and decided she was much better off with Magician Praff, who was off in Romford all week, attending various meetings. Fred was well again and back to work, fortunately. He dropped her off at the hall about an hour ago. Magician Bailey suddenly straightened. Alvy's gaze flew back to the stage. Two rows of chairs occupied its left side, her left, and she smiled at the man next in line. From a podium on the right, an aging man, Magician Tagus Praff, Magician Praff's uncle, said, "Magician Bennett John Cooper, District 6. Alvy clapped as loudly as she could as Bennett, looking smart in his white folder's uniform, stood and crossed the stage. He smiled as he shook Magician Tagus Praff's hand and accepted his magician's certificate. He'd done it, just like Alvy had known he would. She continued clapping until he exited the stage and sat in the front row with the other new magicians, two of whom wore green polymaker's uniforms. That would be her soon enough. She'd estimated completing her apprenticeship in 2 years, 7 months, 1 week, and 2.6 days that morning. That would put her own graduation ceremony in December or January. But today wasn't about her. Her eyes watched Bennett, his hair bright even beneath the dimmed lights. The rest of the graduates passed by in a blur. Beside her, Magician Bailey had also lost interest. Once the last person exited the stage, Magician Tagus Praff addressed the audience. "Ladies and gentlemen, let us give these new magicians another round of applause." Alvy clapped until her hands hurt. "It has been a long road for these men and women, but they have prevailed. They have overcome difficulties of all kinds to be sitting here today, representing their disciplines. I give them the highest praise." He turned and cleared his throat. "To you, magicians, I give you the admonition to continue to persevere. Make your mark on this world. Expand your gifts. Reach out to those in need, and reach high to your maker. Treat your magic with respect and loyalty, and it will do likewise. Leave this world a better place than it was when you entered it. The future calls to you. Now is the time to answer." The audience clapped again. Magician Tagus Praff bowed once and exited the stage. Magician Avioski, the gaffer who had been present at Alvy's bonding, stepped onto the stage and congratulated the magicians, announced the location of a reception hall should anyone wish to attend and speak to the new graduates, and closed the meeting. The gaffer lights overhead brightened to their full power, stinging Alvy's eyes. She grabbed her purse and jumped to her feet, waiting for her row to clear so she could make it to the aisle. Magician Bailey seemed more interested in something behind him than in escaping his chair. Alvy followed his gaze, and for a moment she thought she saw the magician from the post office. But the flash of orange hair disappeared out one of the hall's many doors, out of sight. Finally freed, Alvy hurried down the aisle and toward the stage, where Bennett stood with his family. She paused behind his mother for a moment, waiting for a gap in the conversation between Bennett and his father, when she caught Bennett's eye. He grinned and stepped forward, taking her hand and pulling her up next to him. "This is Alvy," he said to his father. His father was a broad man, with a thick brown mustache and thicker brown hair. He also had brown eyes. That was where Bennett and Ethel had gotten theirs from. "Well, I'll be. The woman I've always heard of but never seen. It's a pleasure, lass." Alvy smiled and offered her hand. Mr. Cooper shook it vigorously. He had quite the grip. "It's nice to meet you." Bennett introduced her to his two other sisters, Elizabeth, who was married and sat between Bennett and Ethel in age, and Hattie, the youngest, at 19. She was the only one who shared her father's dark hair. All of them had his dark eyes. Alvy had already met Mrs. Cooper, but she let Bennett make the introduction all the same. Mrs. Cooper seemed much more amiable this time around than when Alvy had popped up on her doorstep in the rain. She turned to him when the introductions were finished. "You did it," she beamed. "You're a folder now. Oh, Bennett, there's so much you can do. Are you going to specialize?" He laughed. "Probably, but I haven't decided on a focus yet. I'm sure you're full of ideas." She nodded, but glancing at the family, figured now was not the time to blather about how excellent he would be in ancient text restoration or banquet decor. The group chatted a little more before Mr. Cooper directed them to the reception hall, after which they'd go out to dinner to celebrate. Alvy laced her fingers with Bennett's, and as they shuffled from the grand chamber, Ethel weaved her arm through Alvy's. Plastic fingers closed softly around her forearm. Alvy nearly jumped at the touch. "Ethel, you're getting so good at it." In the first weeks with her prosthesis, Ethel's grip had been hard and painful. She grinned. "I know, and watch." She stared hard at the false hand and lifted her index finger, middle finger, and ring finger, each one separate from the others. She frowned. "That little finger is still giving me trouble." "No one needs pinkies," Alvy offered. Ethel rolled her eyes. "You can't properly drink tea without a little finger." Bennett said, "You drink tea with your right hand." She shrugged. "I want to have the option." Alvy laughed. It thrilled her to no end that Ethel was doing so well with the prosthesis, and that she was getting out of the house more because of it. The plastic hand wasn't quick or weighted enough to let her play the piano, not yet, but there was always the option for a second model, and a third, and a fourth. Perhaps that would be Alvy's specialty once she became a polymaker, and after that, she'd create something new, something unheard of, something to present at conventions all over the world, something to sign her name to. After all, it wasn't about the magic, it was about the discovery. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Plastic Magician by Charlie N. Holmberg, performed by Sarah Zimmerman. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing Incorporated, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.